03. An economy that privileges relational goods, listening to the cry of the poor. The current economy excels in the production of material goods, yet it generates dissatisfaction, jeopardizes the sustainability of the global ecosystem, and widens the gap between the rich and the poor. To address these issues, I propose revisiting some fundamental values from the Franciscan economic model, which flourished particularly during the 13th to 15th centuries. The Franciscans advocate for an economy that prioritizes relational goods and strengthens community ties, thereby preventing exclusion and effectively responding to the needs of the poor. The Franciscan perspective underscores the importance of integrating efficiency with solidarity, balancing material goods with relational goods, and merging economic capital with social capital. Even if material poverty were minimized in an ideal situation, people would still require the social relationships that foster community. The Franciscans promote a social market economy that contrasts with contemporary capitalism. While both systems support free participation and initiative in the market, their approaches differ. A social market economy insists that participation must be not only free but also ethical, prioritizing the common good over individual profit. In this model, social capital takes precedence over economic capital, and relational goods are valued above material goods. Material goods are beneficial, but without relational goods, they cannot bring happiness. Economic capital can enhance material wealth, but without social capital, it cannot enrich the community. As stated, goods are important if and when they make us live well. Productivity and efficiency should not come at the cost of harming nature, increasing social inequalities, or compromising the dignity of workers. In the first part of my presentation, I will present the challenges posed by the current economic system, which, while highly efficient at producing material goods, exacerbates inequalities and damages the ecosystem. In the second part, I will examine aspects of the free and fraternal economy advocated by the Franciscans. This approach avoids paternalistic assistance, strengthens community bonds, and turns the market into a relational space. Through initiatives such as the Mounts of Piety, it aims to prevent exclusion and promote the necessary circulation of wealth. 1. An efficient economy that excludes and pollutes. The current economic system is highly productive, but it is unsustainable and generates inequalities and dissatisfaction. It does not address real needs but instead stimulates endless desires. This approach seeks to increase material goods indefinitely, ignoring that such a path inevitably leads to ecological disaster because natural resources are finite. As early as 1927, Cowdrick referred to the new economic gospel of consumption. A few decades later, in 1955, Victor Lebeau, a proponent of this overconsumption and throwaway society, stated bluntly, "Our enormously productive economy demands that we make consumption our way of life, that we convert the buying and use of goods into rituals, that we seek our spiritual satisfaction, our ego satisfaction, in consumption. The measure of social status, of social acceptance, of prestige, is now to be found in our consumptive patterns. We need things consumed, burned up, worn out, replaced, and discarded at an ever-increasing rate." Mahatma Gandhi aptly remarked, "The world has enough for everybody's need, but not enough for everybody's greed." Zygmunt Bauman added that ours is the first society in history to promise continuous happiness, available here and now, at every moment, and without end. To promote this transient happiness, it relies on advertising, planned obsolescence, and easy credit. Everything is marketed as a basic, urgent, and indispensable need, leading people to buy for pleasure rather than necessity. 1.1. Anonymous and functional relationships. The global market has accentuated anonymity in economic transactions, fostering purely instrumental relationships devoid of altruism. This anonymity is a fundamental characteristic of capitalism, even more critical than self-interest, as it is easier to exploit others when they are merely strangers. Economic science has developed based on an average, abstract, and immutable individual, leaving little room for addressing each person's unique situation. It discusses everyone in general but no one in particular. Without recognizing the individuality of others, concepts like gratuitousness and donation are entirely excluded. What truly matters is the utility derived from these anonymous variables. This non-two-ism is a hallmark of capitalism, excluding altruism and genuine interpersonal relationships from the economic domain. Others are seen not as thou but as anonymous, instrumental entities. It is not from the benevolence of the butcher, the brewer, or the baker that we expect our dinner, but from their regard to their own interest. We address ourselves, not to their humanity, but to their self-love, and never talk to them of our own necessities, but of their advantages. The market is perceived as an ethically neutral mechanism focused solely on increasing wealth efficiently, leaving distribution to the state and reciprocity to civil society. Within the market, only instrumental and impersonal relationships thrive, as competitiveness is incompatible with affectionate, authentically human relations. Only in a second moment, already in the social field, the welfare state is expected to mitigate the damage caused by this war of interests. Redistributing wealth based on solidarity or appealing to the generosity of the rich. Thus, moral values and gratuitousness are relegated to civil society, not the economic realm. Philanthropic activities emerge later, in the political field, but they are neither intrinsic to it nor to the realm of economics. 1.2. Fraternity sacrificed to efficiency. Current capitalism claims to have boosted productivity and economic capital, yet it has impoverished social capital by promoting individualistic competitiveness. This has led to increased mutual mistrust, deepened social inequalities, and heightened dissatisfaction. In striving for a more efficient macroeconomy, it has widened the gap between rich and poor and has left people feeling unhappy with a lower level of well-being. Since the 18th century, the prevailing utilitarian mentality has prioritized capital over individuals and sought to improve macroeconomic results at any cost. Detaching economic rationality from ethical considerations. This mindset has permeated social relationships and influenced our perceptions of reality and ourselves. Social confrontation and the war of interests are seen as inevitable and even necessary for societal improvement and economic progress. In the economic realm, freedom and equality often require the renunciation of fraternity. The social contract liberates the individual from family and community ties that regulated previous hierarchical societies. Freed from these dependencies, the citizen can cooperate without sacrifice in a rational and methodical manner, with justice as the only reference. This type of mercantile and impersonal relationship is believed to free the individual and enable mature and authentic sociability in the civil sphere. Good reputation and trust are seen as products of the market, not prerequisites. Thus, economic freedom and independence become the foundation of all other social freedoms. The economic builds the social. 1.2.1. A market society creates conditions for true friendship. Although thinkers like Hobbes exclude fraternity from the public domain, Adam Smith's Political Economy suggests that a market society creates conditions for true friendship in the civil sphere. A society without markets, like the feudal one, generates dependency relationships, as that is the only way people can acquire what they need. Frederick Bastiat famously said, "If goods don't cross frontiers, sooner or later cannons will." Smith, Malthus, Keynes, and other liberals believe that the market can build civil society when embedded within fair and effective institutions and supported by trust and civic virtues that are generated. In the private sphere, they do not dismiss the importance of ethical values, religious beliefs, and intrinsic motivations. However, they argue that, to increase system efficiency, economists should focus on extrinsic motivations. As the market can function without reciprocity and non-instrumental relationships that develop in the civil sphere. 1.2.2. Towards a less technocratic and mechanistic economy. In recent decades, significant changes have emerged. Economic theory has moved away from its technocratic and mechanistic dogmatism, recognizing the importance of social context and cognitive limits in decision-making processes. Experimental economics and neuroeconomics, along with cognitive psychology, have contributed to this shift. The supposed axiological neutrality of economic knowledge has been questioned. This neutrality was based on the concept of the individual as homo economicus, utilitarian, anonymous, radically self-interested, and therefore predictable. Empirical analysis has shown that such behavior, as advocated by neoclassical economics, applies only to a small group of free riders. The importance of altruistic preferences, intrinsic motivations, and non-instrumental relationships is now acknowledged. The discourse has shifted from interest struggle to contracts and consensus. Topics like public happiness, relational goods, and reciprocity have re-entered the economic debate. Though scholars often struggle to translate these theoretical positions into practical applications, it has been observed that the main cause of underdevelopment in many countries is not merely a shortage of technical means and well-trained workers, but a lack of mutual trust, which generates uncertainty throughout the economic system. Even in developed countries like the United States, the decline of labor associations appears to slow economic development. When credit is lacking, the market becomes paralyzed. 2. The Franciscans promote a free and fraternal economy. Following the example of their founder, the Franciscans of the 13th-15th centuries rejected anything that could disrupt the Christian community, particularly condemning the greed of those who amassed wealth in unproductive and sterile ways, hoarded personal gifts, and unscrupulously exploited the needs of others. By renouncing money, the followers of Saint Francis emphasized the importance of immaterial goods and the relationships that build the community. They promoted a free and fraternal economy that seeks to include everyone, fostering community ties, personal honesty, and mutual trust, while directing production toward the common good. The community benefits from the economic activity of everyone, who in turn receives what they deserve and is recognized as a social benefactor. The Franciscan economic vision is characterized by its rejection of greedy hoarding and its insistence on the continuous circulation of wealth so that all can benefit. Those who accumulate goods in a socially sterile manner turn them into idols, undermining the foundations of community life. Conversely, the friars encouraged everyone to assist those in need and to reintegrate the marginalized. Instead of merely giving alms or offering punctual and paternalistic social assistance, they addressed the root of the problems and invited both the rich and the poor to contribute to the solutions. Some of the most rigorous and austere friars, such as Peter of John Olivi, effectively helped the poor obtain the monetary credits they urgently needed to make their way in the new economy. In doing so, they laid the theoretical foundations of a new economic system, while Bernardino de Feltre and many other preachers promoted the establishment of the Monte di Pietà, which provided financial support to those in need. 2.1. An innovative and well-argued reflection. Rather than retreating to remote monasteries to avoid the hustle and dangers of city life, the Franciscans chose to work and live among the poor and merchants. They regarded people as naturally friendly and social beings, not as predators. This genuine love for people motivated them to humanize the emerging economy through well-reasoned reflections on the issues hindering it, particularly usury, interest-bearing loans, and the factors determining value. Their perspective was not solely economic but deeply theological and social. Peter of John Olivi, for example, used economic logic in a coherent and innovative way, according to its internal principles. His work contributed to the understanding and acceptance of the new market economy, although his reflections remained within a theological moral framework. 2.2. Avoiding paternalistic assistance that demeans those in need. The Franciscans avoided paternalistic social assistance that is demeaning to those in need, creates dependency, and perpetuates prostration. They understood that merely addressing immediate material needs was insufficient. Instead, it was necessary to help the needy rediscover their dignity, feel useful, appreciated, and capable of joyfully contributing to the community's construction. Francis tells his friars that they must rejoice when they live among people considered of little value and looked down upon, among the poor and the powerless, the sick and the lepers, and the beggars by the wayside. He viewed it as a duty of justice to return some of the alms received by the brothers to the poor. He also encouraged the friars to find the most suitable help for each destitute person. In line with Francis's guidance, the Franciscans reserved St. Anthony's Bread and other similar initiatives for those in extreme poverty who could not ensure their own physical subsistence. Conversely, the mounts of piety were intended for the poor who could still be industrious and efficient but lacked access to monetary credit under normal market conditions. 2.2.1. The Arks of Mercy and the Mounts of Piety. The Mounts of Piety flourished primarily in Italy, promoted and supported by the Franciscans of the Observance, though their establishment was typically managed by civil authorities. The first Italian Mount of Piety was founded in Perugia in 1462, and by 1562, over 200 such institutions existed across Italy. The purpose of the Mounts of Piety was to provide social redemption for the moderately poor before they became irrecoverably impoverished. These institutions lent small amounts of money with pawned goods as collateral, for a period of less than 1 year, with the obligation to reintegrate, in the first 4 months. At least a quarter of the amount lent, these conditions were flexible, depending on the economic situation and the profitability that the recipient could achieve. 2.2.2. Everybody called to build the community. Through initiatives like the Mounts of Piety, the Christian community helped prevent citizens from falling into extreme poverty, reduced the number of indigents, recovered human energies, avoided the rise of individualistic behavior, and reinforced its internal cohesion. All members of the community were called upon to cooperate. Wealthy individuals unwilling to donate part of their patrimony were offered sufficient guarantees so they could at least contribute to the mount's functioning by temporarily depositing part of their assets. Meanwhile, the mounts encouraged industriousness among the poor, who had to leave some mortgaged goods to obtain credit, thereby preventing them from feeling completely inept or wounded in their dignity. The goods exchanged were not only material but also spiritual. The poor, besides obtaining the money they needed for their economic initiatives, could also progress in humility since they had to ask for help. The rich had the opportunity to perform charitable acts that enhanced their social reputation without risking their wealth. In addition to keeping their goods in a safe place, they could also dispose of them immediately if needed. 2.3. The market is a relational space. Franciscans envision the market as a relational space, a system that fosters social relations through the continuous circulation of wealth. They believe the market should not be a battleground where the most cunning prevail, but rather a network of human relations based on mutual trust, aimed at strengthening community ties both effectively and effectively. The market is seen as a meeting place, an environment where reciprocal confidence is reinforced and everyone feels like an active member of their community. 2.3.1. Interest and competition. In this view, interest regains its original meaning of interesse, indicating that one's own interest is inseparable from the good of others. Credit extends beyond merely lending money, it encompasses mutual trust. In fact, trust boosts productivity. Instead of a ruthless war of interests, business operations and competition return to their etymological roots, which means a joint search for the best solution, the most appropriate response. By operating in this manner, economic activity enhances social capital and strengthens the fraternal bonds that unite individuals and peoples. 2.3.2. Based on honesty and mutual trust. From the Franciscan perspective, an authentic merchant is one who earns a reputation as an honest and trustworthy individual. This reputation is achieved by leading an exemplary Christian life and prioritizing the client's welfare over personal gain, thereby promoting the common good. Every commercial contract inherently includes an implicit agreement of mutual trust that must be respected. If a merchant were to betray this trust by deceiving the customer, it would be considered a mortal sin, reducing the merchant, ipso facto, to the status of a dangerous usurer. Olivi and Bernardino of Siena explain it using these words. If a seller has such a good name or is of such elevated state that his word is habitually believed more readily or at least no less than the oath of another, then it is certainly mortal sin if he falsifies the price of goods by saying deceitfully, "It cost me such and such," or "I could have gotten such and such for this," because the buyer trusts the seller and the seller accepts that trust, but then he sells the merchandise betraying the given and accepted guarantee. In these cases, the seller must give back all that has defrauded, under penalty of mortal sin, since he has broken a pact founded on mutual trust. Usurers and speculators disrupt the community, while honest merchants strengthen it by facilitating mercantile exchanges and ensuring the availability of goods. 2.4. Common good without marginalized people. Franciscan economics is based on the principle of the common good, which favors personal initiative without endangering the good of the community. Social utility takes precedence over purely economic utility. Likewise, the good of the whole community is privileged over the good of the individual. Franciscan economics is founded on the principle of the common good, emphasizing personal initiative while ensuring that it does not endanger the community's welfare. In this model, social utility is prioritized over purely economic gains, and the well-being of the entire community is privileged over individual interests. This approach does not reject profit but emphasizes its social purpose. Human relationships and happiness are considered more important than the mere accumulation of material wealth. The followers of Saint Francis believe that personal profit is acceptable only when it aligns with public benefit and virtuous practices. True merchants are those who serve the community with responsibility and industriousness, even taking risks. According to the rules of justice, the community rewards the social benefits provided by these virtuous and honest merchants. Conversely, avaricious individuals, usurers, and speculators are deemed dangerous as they hoard common wealth and harm community life. People not fully integrated into the Christian community are also viewed with suspicion. 2.4.1. The necessary circulation of wealth. Franciscan economics firmly rejects greed, financial speculation, and the sterile storage of goods. Wealth must circulate continuously to meet the real needs of the community and strengthen human relationships, rather than becoming fetishes accumulated by misers for personal gain. Bernardino of Siena criticized hoarding, urging the wealthy to invest in their shops and communities rather than keeping money inactive. How many things do you have dead in your house today, and how many are there who, even though they have plenty, still buy more? It would be better for you to put that money in your shop, instead of keeping it dead as you do. Franciscans denounce usury not just because of the sterility of money and the inalienability of time, as contemporary authors often argued, but primarily due to its detrimental effects on the community. Those who accumulate wealth and prioritize personal profit over communal welfare are seen as undermining the very foundations of community life. 2.4.2. Priority to the subjective and communal value of goods. The Franciscans approached economic questions by focusing on the community's perspective, pioneering the idea of the subjective value of goods, a truly innovative concept for their time. They relativized the economic value of material objects, tying it directly to the needs and intentionality of the specific community rather than to any intrinsic logical value of the object. In this view, the value or price of goods, the merchant's profit, and the worker's wage were all determined by considering the individual's specific circumstances in the broader context of their community. This approach subordinates economic capital to social capital, ensuring that material goods serve the goal of community well-being. Peter of John Olivi emphasized charity as the governing principle of community relations. He argued that the community collectively determines the fair price and profit, emphasizing that the social and relational dimensions of economic value are paramount. Olivet's approach redefined economic value and introduced the concept of monetary capital with a strong emphasis on social and relational considerations, highlighting the community as the primary agent in economic transactions. Conclusion. The current crisis teaches us that ethics is not external to the economy, but internal, and that the economy cannot function if it does not bear within it an ethical component for the market to function effectively. It requires a reliable social environment with clear rules that everyone accepts and respects. There is an urgent need to steer the globalization of humanity in relational terms, in terms of communion and the sharing of goods. The human being reaches full development through self-donation and establishing authentic and meaningful relationships. As noted in Caritas in Veritate, the human creature is defined through interpersonal relations. The more authentically he or she lives these relations, the more his or her own personal identity matures. Paradoxically, economic development has often been accompanied by increasing dissatisfaction. The quality of life that economic goods should ensure has diminished or is entirely missing. Luigi Bruni relates this paradox to the decline of civil economy during the 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries. The insights of Francis of Assisi and the reflections of the Franciscans during the 13th to 15th centuries remain surprisingly relevant today and can help establish the fundamental principles of a new, more humane and humanizing economic system. We have presented some of the aspects of this Franciscan economic vision, close to pastoral, which operated alongside the efficiency model of Jewish bankers for many years but was gradually abandoned during the 16th to 18th centuries. The civil economy was significant until the end of the 16th century, when a capitalist economic model emerged and consolidated during the Industrial Revolution. This model replaced the community-oriented concept that inspired the Mounts of Piety. The line represented by the Hebrew moneylenders prevailed and was further reinforced by Bentham's utilitarianism and the absolutist regimes, with theorists like Machiavelli and Hobbes advocating for it. Recently, however, new initiatives have emerged that revive the Franciscan economic line in various ways. Examples include microcredit, the economy of communion, civil economy, ethical finance, bioeconomy, and the organizations of the third sector, which in Italy alone numbered more than 336,000 in 2015 and employed over 5.5 million volunteers. The economic and social success of these initiatives worldwide demonstrates the relevance of the Franciscan proposal. This approach aims to humanize the economic system in the process of globalization, ensuring that economic growth is aligned with ethical principles and the common good.